Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And you're listening to Just Food Stories, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. If you missed the live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just Food is a nonprofit organization committed to helping people build community food projects. We know that people all over New York City know that we need to change our food system, and they want to make that change. But so often, people don't even know where to start. So we'd like to take the next half hour and introduce you to some people who started, taking their passions and skills to bring change. Hopefully their stories will inspire you to create your own Just Food story. Today, I am so excited to be talking with Melissa Danielle, coordinator of Bed-Stuy Bounty, and also a core member of Bed-Stuy Farm Share. She's a professional health coach and a food project consultant, but more than just those titles, I think Melissa is a true advocate for food justice. Her Just Food story is truly inspirational, and her work is genuinely changing our food landscape here in New York. So thank you so much, Melissa, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yahoo. I want to jump right into the work you're doing now, and we were talking a little bit before the show, but one of my favorite things that I've read that you said was that your interest in sort of food advocacy and food justice wasn't an aha moment. It was a series of WTF moments, which I think it sums it up pretty well for a lot of us in this world, and I'd like just to hear more about a couple of those WTF moments.
Okay, so, you know, the big thing to describe food inequities in a particular community is to call it a food desert. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at what a food desert was, or how it was being defined nationally and by the USDA, and I was, you know, looking at what was happening with food in my neighborhood, it wasn't a food desert. You know, I live in a, my neighborhood has 30 supermarkets.
Right.
Where I live, I can walk to four supermarkets and an Asian grocer within a 5 to 20 minute walk.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the issue of a lack of access of fresh produce or even affordable produce, because affordable is relative.
Yeah.
You know, it was an issue of quality. It was an issue of service. So consistently, the messages that I was getting from the community was not that there wasn't access to fresh produce or healthier foods items. It was, I walk into this supermarket and it smells a certain way, or it doesn't look like they've swept the floors, or the produce is moldy. And then I go to the manager and I complain about the quality of the produce, or I ask for a particular item and I'm dismissed when it comes to the quality of the produce, or I'm told the people in this neighborhood don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that for me was an incredible disconnect from all the ways in which we look at food.
Right.
Because it's not just about food. Like we no longer just go for the thing.
Right.
You know,
we go for an
experience.
Right.
There's a reason why Whole Foods looks the way it does.
Right.
And it's a reason why it costs the way it does. Whole Foods is giving you an experience.
Right.
And they're also paying their staff higher, especially in New York City. They pay them higher than minimum wage. They are doing things that give them a certain quality of life and experience as employees. And so you have to pay for that.
Right.
And so that's really what was happening with me, and why I decided to put a large chunk of my time learning about the food system and learning how to incorporate local seasonal food into the work that I was doing as a health coach.
Right. So, and so in terms of, you know, your sort of story a little bit backing up, like, did you know you wanted to be involved in health and wellness and nutrition? Did you know you wanted to be involved in food? Were you coming at it more from like, I want to do something to make the world a better place? You know, was it food or was it justice or was it just kind of an accident or what happened?
It was very personal for me. Mm-hmm. I was using food to heal from chronic sinus allergies. I did the traditional medical treatment for my allergies. I was taking pills twice a day and sinus mm-hmm. nasal sprays twice a day. I was going for a shot once a week. And I did that for about a month and a half, and I was a zombie. Like, I was mm-hmm. just, it was brain fog. It was crazy. And I said, you know, I don't want to live the rest of my life this way. So I started to research, you know, what other things that I could do to address my chronic sinus condition.
Right.
And I discovered that it was an autoimmune response. And then I started to look at, you know, the foods that I was eating mm-hmm. and, you know, my self-care. And that led me to Institute for Integrative Nutrition. And it's interesting because I really didn't think that I was going to be a health coach.
Right.
I was just going there to further my education about like how to really get myself to the health that I wanted to get to. And during that time, it's so funny because there are a lot of us that graduate from IIN and we're going to save the world
right.
with all this information. And then you were like, oh no, that's really not how that works. But,
well, you are, well, you're just, you know, you're doing it in a very, grassroots way.
Yeah.
Right.
And so at that time I had transitioned to a plant-based diet. I was using a plant-based diet as therapy.
Right.
And I kept meeting all these vegans who didn't eat vegetables.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is crazy
yeah.
that, you know, their diets mimic the standard American diet of highly processed artificial food stuff.
Yeah.
And there were no fresh vegetables there. And then there was this continuous bashing of agriculture and farming. And I had a relationship with the farmer's market. I was going to the farmer's market at that time right. regularly. And I would go to the farmer's market and, you know, after a while you start, if they see you, mm-hmm. you're a regular, you have these relationships.
Yep.
And I was just like, you know, these people don't look like the kind of people that are being described,
right.
you know? And so I said, you know, I need to understand what the vegan community is talking about with the agriculture there. Against mm-hmm. and find out why they're not eating vegetables.
Were they doing it out of like a fight the man?
It was
thing,
it or was were they, you know? It was a big like, you know, well, you know, all animal suffering is evil.
Right.
And then factory farming is evil.
Right.
And it was interesting because there was no critical analysis of where the cotton in the t-shirt that right. said, I don't eat my friends, was right. how that was being produced.
Right.
There was no analysis of where their chocolate or vanilla or coffee was right. coming from. There was no analysis of where the soy that dominates right. their food, how that was being produced.
I know. Sometimes I talk about how, you know, if you really thought about everything, you would just go live in a yurt
yes.
and, you know, make your own everything. And
yes.
just, I mean, because you, when you start just narrowing it down, and that's why I think what you're doing is so interesting, because you are actually giving people a choice, and what you're sort of, I think we should explain. I think it's really cool because basically what you've done is sort of taken the idea of fresh, good produce out of a CSA model and out of a farmer's market model and turned it into a wholesale model through your project. Yes. So tell me a little bit about, you know, how did Bed-Stuy Bounty, so clearly, you know, people were not satisfied with the quality and the service, and there was a little bit of, I mean, would you call it discrimination in the way that access was presented to your community, or would you say that it was just lack of thought or lack of funds to make it more attractive and better food? And
I would say that there definitely is a certain level of discrimination when it comes to how food is presented in communities like Bed-Stuy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not all these things that you learn when you get involved in a food system, where you go into a neighborhood and it's, and you look and you see, why does this neighborhood have more fast food restaurants than other neighborhoods? Why is it that the same supermarket chain, you know, they're the same items cost more here than they do in at the same chain in another neighborhood?
Right.
And you start to learn things like, you know, how businesses get funding in the name of, you know, job creation. They get access to space in the name of job creation, regardless of whether or not they're actually creating sustainable
right.
jobs
for that community.
For that community.
Right.
And you know, then there also is a perception about what people will purchase and what they'll consume. And there's also the problem of, you know, local matters and relationships matter. And if you own a business in a neighborhood that you don't live in,
mm-hmm.
you have a very different perception and idea of
that community.
Right. And that's really a big issue in the neighborhood in terms of who is owning the food establishments.
Right. And that's something that we talk a lot about at Just Food with, you know, the community food projects. It can't be an outside group of people deciding what a community needs and how it's going to work. It needs to be by the community. And so what is Bed-Stuy Bounty for people who don't know?
Bed-Stuy Bounty is a buying club that prioritizes purchasing local foods. We have direct relationships with distributors who broker local foods into the supermarkets that we're familiar with in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And so the platform that we use to manage orders is called wholeshare.com. It's a platform that anyone in New York State and some parts of New Jersey and a few other cities in the Northeast can use to build a direct relationship with a distributor to get the foods that they want to eat at wholesale prices.
So if I wanted to build a co-op for my community, I would go to wholeshare.com.
Wholeshare has really made the stepping stone from to a co-op much more accessible and efficient,
right?
With their online platform.
And how did you just find space, or what, you know, how did you, that's a really cool idea. And then how do you go from, well, this is what this community needs for these reasons, and then doing it?
Well, I operate out of my house. and there are 125 groups in New York State.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure a good chunk of them are operating out of their homes or their garages. And you don't get the food.
People order it through you?
People order it through me, and it gets delivered to my house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And other places, they are using community centers.
Right.
They are collaborating with other entities in their community. It might be a farm that's running a wholeshare
mm-hmm.
club in addition to their CSA. So if they wanted to offer added value products to their members in addition to what the CSA does, that's
right.
a great way to manage it.
So in addition to added value, like, what does wholeshare give people that, I mean, clearly what they're not getting an experience in the same way that they are going to a shop. So it doesn't necessarily solve for, you know, a not as lovely shop experience. But what are they getting, would you say? Like, why is it so important to the community to have that ability?
The value in wholeshare is that we are ordering in bulk and at wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
And when you order in bulk, you get more value for your dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also minimizing packaging waste.
Right.
And what's really great as to how they figured out this bulk situation, because mm-hmm. when you order from a distributor, you have an order minimum.
Right.
You have to meet this order minimum before you can get a delivery. And an individual may not be able to meet that
right.
order minimum. So if you get a group of people to go in on this order with you, you can then, you know, you have this collective buying power. And traditional buying clubs have typically been this thing where everyone give, you know, they contribute a certain amount of money,
right,
and then an order is placed and then they divide up whatever that order is.
Right.
There hasn't been a lot of choice in what you get.
Right.
And so what's nice about Whole Share is that you, as the member going in with other members, you're buying what you want.
Right.
And within that, you have the option to go in on larger bulk items with each other.
Right.
So if there's a case of water, and we love Saratoga spring water, I'd be shouting out lots of the brands that we
all right, shout them out. This is your opportunity.
So we love Saratoga sparkling spring water, and we love Red Jacket juices.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may not want a case, but if you might just want to bottles.
Right. But if there's six other people who want two bottles, right.
Right. And so we can do the same thing with Farmer Ground Flour and Cayuga Organics. We can do the same thing with, you know, just about anything that's coming in a case.
And do you see that the members of this buying club basically are, I mean, what do they say, you know, if you had to sort of analyze the number one reason why they like this? Is it because it gives them choice? Is it because it gives them some sort of power? Is it, you know, they're feeling part of a community? Like, what is
I would say the top reasons that they are a part of it is because they have buyer choice,
mm-hmm.
And they also are getting local, they're participating in local foods, and they really like the quality of the stuff. And we're working with the same distributors that Whole Foods and Parts of Food Co-op and Fresh Direct have.
Right.
So we have Regional Access, which really is based in Ithaca. We have Hudson Valley Harvest. We have Tierra Farm. So we're getting a wide range of products in the produce pantry, meat and dairy categories.
That's amazing. Yeah. Do you have freezer space?
I have freezer space. Okay. I have a house. I'm originally from here.
Right.
I live in a house. I have space.
Right.
But everything typically gets picked up the day that it comes in.
How many members are there now?
I have 62. I have a membership structure. So
That's
I have about 60-ish members who have paid an annual membership, and then I have about 90 something members who are doing a pay as you go option.
Right.
So there's more commitment from the people who have paid an annual membership. And the membership fee is just supporting the overhead because they don't actually help me with the orders.
I mean, are you unpacking?
Yes. So I have to actually break down the orders and put them together. I'm the only, I think, as far as I know, I'm the only Whole Share group that does it. The other Whole Share groups, people show up and do their breakdowns.
We're definitely going to talk more about Bed-Stuy Bounty and WholeShare.com. But right now we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back with Just Food Stories on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Oh, Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hi there, welcome back. I'm Allie, and you're listening to Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org, and I'm here with Melissa Danielle from Bed-Stuy Bounty, and we're talking about this amazing, can we call it a co-op? Should we call it?
I call it a buying club.
A buying club.
Yes. Which are precursors to co-ops, but a buying club doesn't ever have to be a co-op, but usually co-ops start out as buying clubs.
Right, okay. So it's this buying club in Bed-Stuy that you basically run out of your home. You have 62 members, and it sounds like
I have 62 members who have spent over $50,000 in 2.5 years on local food. And so this is pretty much a passion project because I don't get any of that money.
No, but that's pretty amazing. Yeah. Because so we were talking a little bit before. Well, okay. I have so many questions, so I'm going to back up a little bit. But so we were talking a little bit about why this option is important to the Bed-Stuy community. And it was basically about, you know, customer choice and getting. And I think what you were saying at the opening of the show, you know, is really relevant, that access isn't just about the number of stores, and it's not even necessarily about the amount of produce, but it's about the experience of getting that produce. And, you know, why is it that in a community like Bed-Stuy, the produce shouldn't be as beautiful or as charmingly arranged or, you know, as lovingly presented? And one of the things you and I were talking about is the cost of that. And that there is, you know, in all sorts of places in society, the understanding of value of our food has to just be readjusted. You know, people are really used to cheap food. Mm-hmm. And so talk a little bit about how, you know, the connection between basically what you're doing and how that is changing the paradigm a little bit. Talk a little bit about that, because it's not a big question or anything like that.
Well, what's nice, I think that what helps my members participate in Whole Share is that they're getting this food at wholesale prices.
Right.
There's a very small markup that Whole Share uses, and it's a flat markup across the board. It's not a variable markup as you would find
right.
at a grocery
50%.
Store. And it's not 50%. Yeah, it's not 50%. It's not. I don't even think it's 20%.
Right.
You know, and so they come back because they see the quality.
Right.
And even when it comes to local meat, like I really actually don't think that any of us would be buying as much local meat that we buy. We buy a lot of meat. My group mm-hmm. buys a lot of meat from Hudson Valley Harvest.
Nice.
And we wouldn't be able to do that if we weren't getting it at those prices.
Right.
And if Hudson Valley Harvest hadn't signed on, if they hadn't thought that this was something to right. really to do.
I mean, a silly question, but is there local meat in the grocery stores outside of what you're doing? I mean, what percentage of the community has access to local meat?
You know something? I went to a local supermarket for the first time in like 6 months in my uh-huh. neighborhood. And so I don't actually look for local meat, but to my knowledge, it doesn't get labeled that way as it would if you were going to Union Market or
right.
Whole Foods.
Right.
And they just might say it's New Jersey that's local or Pennsylvania that's local. But we actually get to see on our labels, you know, that this sirloin came from this farm, which traveled to this
right.
Packing, you know, this slaughterhouse facility before it got to you. Like it says that on the label. So we know the actual name of the farm.
Right. I mean, and the thing is, I think also something you said earlier too, was that, you know, the shopkeeper, I guess, said to someone, you know, well, our customers don't care about that. You know, it's such a dismissive thing to say.
Like, yes, and
there's such an under, there's, you know, even with my work with Edible Schoolyard, you know, there's this whole like, you know, well, kids don't want to eat that way. You know, that community doesn't like to eat that way. And that's just categorically incorrect.
Yes.
Across the board.
Yes.
And that, I mean, that's just a misconception and pretty yucky, in my opinion, for yes. lack of a better word. So, I do also want to talk a little bit about why this model, and we only have a few minutes left, but why is the buying club model? I mean, first of all, do you think it's scalable? Do you think that in 5 years you'll be a rockin' co-op? Do you think it'll be more than you know, packing and unpacking and ordering? Do you think that people in the community will pay for that? Do you think that this is a model that will work in other communities? And, you know, and do you think buying clubs are sort of the way a little bit out of the pickle that we're in?
I think that it's important for communities to figure out what, you know, what's best for what they want to do. Like, what's the thing that they want to create? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that's a community garden. Sometimes that's a farmer's market, a CSA, a buying club, an actual grocery store right. that can be a co-op. And all of those things can exist together. But it's really going to depend on how the community wants to participate in that food model.
And how do you get the community organized?
You engage. You talk to people. You have right. meetings. And you consistently create activities and opportunities to have conversations about food and where it comes from. I have no desire to turn Bedside Bounty into a co-op. Mm-hmm. What's nice about Whole Share is that anybody can start a club. It doesn't cost any money to start a club.
That's great.
And so, you know, New York City, Brooklyn, our blocks are their own little micro communities. They have block associations. A block association can start their own Whole Share club.
Right.
There are over 100,000 people who live in my neighborhood. They probably won't all come to me for various reasons. There's no reason for people in an apartment building to have their own Whole Share club.
Right.
The tenant association of a housing project can start their own Whole Share club. You know, a church can have their right. own Whole Share club.
So these micro communities within the communities.
And those are actually the best ways to get it going is with people you already know.
Right. Because then you don't have to worry about promoting it or
sure.
saying like, hey, everyone, this is what we're doing. Please come join. Kind of. So just as our kind of last question of the day, unfortunately, we'd love to talk more, but what would you say if you were someone listening to you right now and you're like, yeah, I want to get this thing going and I want to do this for my community? Like, what would be a word of advice that you wish someone had given you or some kind of word of wisdom? Or
I would say that your own self-care is important. So take care of yourself first. You know, do what makes the most sense for you economically and ecologically and be persistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's bound to be pushback. There's bound to be times where you just want to give up and you just want to have your own life, go back
right.
to your life. But I would just say, you know, that this takes time because you're changing behavior. You're changing a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, choose the thing that you're most interested in. So if you like cooking, cook and build community around that. If you like growing food, grow food.
Right.
You know, if you just wanted to buy, to be the purchaser, you can do that too.
Right. If you're really good at filling out forms, you know,
right.
someone, we were talking to someone, I guess he's Anthony, the volunteer coordinator at Just Food, because I get tons.
I know him.
Yeah. Right. Tons of requests. Like, I want to volunteer. I want to help. I want to, you know, work in a garden. And one of the things that, you know, he always says is, you know, it takes us time and it takes us a lot of, you know, human energy to train you how to do something that you don't already know how to do.
Sure.
But if you're really good at graphic design, you might not think it's that sexy of a volunteer opportunity or like, how is that changing the world if I'm good at graphic design? But use your graphic design and
yes.
give it toward a yes. community food project.
Because, you know, they could definitely use the posters and the flyers.
You know, the people helping fill out forms for parking permits, in my opinion, are like the real advocates.
Yes.
You know, and people like you who are giving people real access, and more than access, you're giving people an opportunity for agency and an opportunity for control and choice. And I think that's pretty rad. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having
for me. Being here. For more information on Melissa's work and to learn more about Bed-Stuy Bounty, visit bedstuybounty.com. Pretty simple. And check out wholeshare.com if you're interested in starting your own buying club or you want to know about the work that Wholeshare does. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much for listening. Evan, thank you for engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you have any questions for the program, you can call 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.